Welcome to Ujiria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Ujiria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ujiria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Ujiria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. It's April 11th. It's Brad Culp here in the studio with Sam Grass and Trevor Walford. We've got Kevin in Dallas. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Come on, Trevor. You're not going to speak. Trevor's not going to be on the air today. Good morning, Brad. How are you?
Yeah, he's a little shy this morning.
I know. Unlike our fill-in host last week. You know, that's what, Kevin, you've got a role. Trevor, you've got a role to play here.
Yeah, well, he's not going to play that role this morning. But he's going to keep you sounding like the Allstate guy.
Let's hope so.
So we got a full show today, so we're going to get right to it this morning. And we're going to start in Dallas with Kevin and his guest, Linda Strobel. I'm going to turn it over to y'all.
All right. Thank you, Brad. As you said, I have Linda Strobel with me in Dallas today. Linda is a licensed master social worker. She is also the owner of Organize and Rejuvenate, which is a professional residential organizing service. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning.
I appreciate you taking the time to join us today, and let's just jump right into it. Have you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and how you
Well, thank you. It's good to be here. As you said, I'm a professional residential organizer and also a medical social worker. I'm originally from Cleveland, Ohio. I have a bachelor's degree from Kent State in Ohio, the one and only Kent State where the Kent State shootings are. I tell people I came down on a 747 in a strong wind. I knew I wanted to get out of the cold weather, so I intentionally came down to and ended up in Dallas. I moved from the snow belt to the Bible belt, I guess. The warm weather agrees with me. I do like it here in Texas. One of my professors at Kent State, one of my favorite professors asked me, well, what kind of facility or venue would you all like to work in? Well, she didn't say y'all, but probably you guys in Cleveland, Ohio. But what facility or venue would you like to work in or not like to work in? And I said, well, I don't think I want to work in a hospital. But obviously now I work in the medical profession. So life is what happens when you make other plans. You never know. I do work right now in the medical profession. When I first came to Dallas, I started out working at Volunteers of America as a habilitator. I work with persons who have developmental disabilities and mental retardation out in the community and did goal setting with them. I also worked at a group home for Evergreen Ministries as a direct service worker, helping them with ADLs, activities of daily living, things in the group home, recreation and social activities. Then I developed an interest in chemical dependency and wanted to study and learn more about it. So I went to Hazleton School here in Dallas, and then I ended up landing a job at Charter Hospital, which is closed down. It was in Plano, as you may recall. And then I worked at Green Oaks Hospital. It's a big psychiatric facility behind Medical City. I worked there as a mental health worker, where I kind of oversaw the psychiatric unit. I worked with folks with depression, anxiety, suicide ideation, personality disorders, schizophrenia, and also worked with on the geriatric psych unit, which is something that was kind of new then, and now it's kind of old hat. And I monitored and charted the patient's behavior and progress. I worked with patients who were maybe at risk, maybe suicidal, had anxiety attacks, and different things like that.
And then at some point, you got into organizing. Was that something you went to school for, or was it just something you found a knack for?
Actually, it was kind of a serendipity thing. I was out work doing some caregiving with a senior and a friend of mine, and I found myself organizing her closet, doing a makeover in a garage, and I thought, wow, this is really fun and interesting. And later on, I learned that people actually do this as a profession. It's a growing profession. So I attended NAPO. It's the National Association of Professional Organizers. And I did some networking with the other organizers, and the rest, they say, is history. I started a part-time business doing it. So I find myself loving social work and the organizing profession both. So I do pretty much both part-time.
So 50-50, or do you find yourself doing one more than the other?
It depends on, I do PRN home health work, so I kind of work around with my clients, the calls I get from the clients, and the PRN work with the home health agencies. I work for about 4 or 5 home health agencies.
Okay.
So it kind of goes back and forth.
So let's have you talk a little bit, you've mentioned your social work side. Now that you're a PRN, what do you find to be the most challenging aspect of being working for 4 or 5 different agencies and on-call?
Yeah, well, it is. The biggest challenge is time management, organizing your time and getting everything done. And so I have to color-code all my files. Each home health agency is color-coordinated. Some do on computer, some of it's manual paper. But just organizing, marketing my own business. I tend to spend a lot. I do long visits. I probably do longer visits. I know the nurses do, but I like to do thorough assessments with people. And when I leave after a home health visit, I want to know they've gotten all the resources that all they could possibly use, and give them some information and motivate them to, you know, to deal with whatever issues they have going on at the home.
Right, right. Do you find that through those visits, do you find that there's a good understanding when you get there of what your role is as a social worker, or do they kind of...
Boy, that's an excellent question. No, in fact, sometimes they say, why are you here? Well, what the heck are you doing? And I have to explain, I'm here to help you with resources so that you can maintain the quality of life in your home, have safety nets in the home for safety and resources. Because the trend today is to keep people in their home, not to have them put them in a nursing home or anything. So what in Medicare, and it's certainly cheaper for Medicare to keep people at home than to pay for them in a nursing home. So we try to, I give them resources like MedAlerts, the bracket they can wear, the necklace. They can hit a little button, and a monitor system is set up where they'll talk directly to someone should they fall or something. Mm-hmm. So it's a safety net where they'd be safe in the home, and then someone can get in, whether it's a family member or a 911 or a neighbor or something. So I help them with resources like that. Caregiving services like your agency. I've given your name to tons of home health people. So it helps them, you know, do things, stay in the home. It improves the quality of their life, too.
Do you do any private, like, elder care management or anything like that, where you just work as a consultant for a family?
Well, when I do go into homes, I do work as a consultant, and then I'm giving them tips about information and resources. So in a sense, I do that overall kind of case management, seeing it as a whole perspective.
So now let's kind of go over to the organizing.
Okay.
And When you get a call, what is the process when somebody calls and says, I need some help organizing?
Sure.
Kind of walk us through how that works.
Well, I kind of ask them what their needs are. What are you looking for? I ask them kind of what are your priorities in your home? You know, you would talk with people that have different vision. Like, the number one priority today, what would you guess in this information era? What is the biggest organizing challenge you would think?
Oh, goodness. Paperwork?
Paper, exactly, yeah. People have an overflow of paper. Even with the presence of computers, we have too much paper. So a lot of people need help with the paper flow system, setting up filing systems, cleaning out, going through things, recycling. So it's setting up filing systems and paper flow systems for them.
And do you run across many people that have hoarding issues through that?
Yeah, I do. I work with clients from all scales, from people who have immaculately clean homes and just need help with, like, new filing systems, and I have some awesome filing systems I set up that are color-coded and that recycle themselves, too. People that homes are very a little bit messy, and then I've gone to homes where stuff is piled all over the desk, the floor, there's no pathway to walk, you can't use the living room for what it's used for, the kitchen counters are full of stuff. The kitchen is unusable to a higher severity of hoarding.
So when you run across those, do you do all the work yourself, or do you have a team that helps you get that sorted out?
Yeah, sometimes it takes a team. You have to really sit down and talk with them what they're willing to do, because it is, hoarding is a compulsion. It is a disorder. In the new DSM-4 or 5 is coming out and just 2013, there is a new psychiatric diagnosis for compulsive hoarding.
Really?
It'll be in the new DSM 2-4 or 5 next year.
Interesting.
Yeah. So they are now recognizing that it is a disorder, mm-hmm. a compulsion to buy and collect, a fear of letting go.
Right. So do you have resources that when you run across that, you can direct them to find the help they need so that it doesn't just go back to their old patterns?
Right. Some of them, if they're at the lower level, I can help them. If the house is in a bad, really bad disorder, it can take a team of us. And I have other associates that I'm calling, and we can work as a team and clean it out. Sometimes I need to go and assess the house. Is it healthy to be in there? Because in severity, some severe hoarding issues, there's mold, there's rodents in the home. It's just not safe.
Right.
Sometimes I've actually had to call the health department to come out and do an evaluation, and that will scare off the client, obviously. It's just a very hard disorder to work with. It's very hard for people to change their behavior and their thinking.
When you come across those, especially when they're seniors, do you find that the senior themselves who lives in the home mm-hmm. is calling you, or is it their adult children calling?
You see, with the hoarding, it's a nurse.
Okay.
It's usually the nurse, the home health nurse, or a family member, or a friend sometimes. They won't ever call for themselves.
Right.
Are you kidding?
So for people...
Although some people do know they need help, but it's hard for them to make that initial push to do something.
Yeah.
Except when you're in the middle of a situation, it's hard to see the forest for the trees, which
right.
is common for all of us.
So for people who maybe don't have the extreme issues, it's just
right.
they're overwhelmed by paperwork or
right.
something like that.
And I have some gentlemen or some women who, you know, they're not into organizing and cleaning, and they're kind of middle of the roaders. And as Rita Rudner, the comedian, so elegantly puts it, they're like, men living with bears with furniture. They're kind of messy homes, but, you know, they're just not into cleaning and organizing. So those are kind of the middle of the road as far as, you know, dirty homes and disorganized.
Yeah, and so...
I work with all levels of
okay, so when you come across something like that, and mm-hmm. let's say it's a senior who is just... recognizes they need to get this sorted out.
Right.
Maybe they want to start having a caregiver come into the home, and
right.
they need to get it straightened up so they can live there.
Right.
What does that process look like? When you show up, do you assess it first and then mm-hmm. give them a game plan and walk them through what they need, or how do you do
that? Yeah, and I have to kind of tailor that to the individual, and it's a very delicate process. It's different for each person, and you have to assess what their comfort level is. You have to work very slowly with these people, too, because it's their thinking. It's very personal. They get overwhelmed very easily when you work with them. I constantly say, you're doing okay. How are you? And I, you know, reward them and compliment them for being willing to change and work, because it is very difficult for them. And in the long run, if they don't consistently work over, I try to work with them on getting a time commitment, because if you created disorganization for 10 years in a home, you're not going to clean it up in one or two sessions. It's a process of cleaning it up. It's going to take, it's a process over time. They're going to have to learn new habits. So I'll have to work with them in cleaning out and starting to throw things out, go through cleaning out several times a week, change their thinking, and make a time commitment.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's very difficult for a lot of people.
So when there's adult children involved and they recognize that their parents may have a problem, how do you tell them to start preparing them, their parents, for the idea of somebody like you coming in and helping them with this process?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know that a lot of people really know how to prepare their parents or, you know, clients for that. I just go out and talk with them and just kind of assess where they're at. They'll tell you they're scared. They tell you they're embarrassed, and that's one indication of a hoarder is they don't have people over because their home is an embarrassment to them,
mm-hmm.
and that they're so cluttered that you can't walk through. And the areas of the home where, like the dining room, you're supposed to be able to sit in, you cannot use it for what it's meant for.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, I don't know that there is a real process. It's going and sitting and assessing, talking with them and seeing what they're willing to do.
Yeah.
And sometimes they may say, I'm willing to do it, and my experience is after a couple of sessions, they no longer can do it, or they stop.
Yeah.
So,
what do you find to be the most rewarding thing that you've come across either
organizing
or both?
Oh, I take a lot of pride in being a catalyst for change. I like prompting a change in people's lives and in their homes. You know, whether it's through being more independent, being more open-minded, having a harmonious, organized home, because your home is like a blueprint of your life and how you take it and run with it. So once your home is clean and organized and harmonious, you could function at a higher level.
I like what you said, that the blueprint.
It's the blueprint of your home. Yeah, that's a metaphor I use.
I like that.
You know, have you ever heard the phrase when you walk into someone's home and they say, I feel the tension in the home is so thick you can cut it with a knife?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what organizing is all about, creating a different feeling or sense in the home.
Yeah. Do you have any specific stories? You don't need to share names, but any specific mm-hmm. stories that you wouldn't mind?
Oh, sure. I have one as an organizer, or actually as a Katrina evacuee that I worked with. She, a lady who before she was a displaced evacuee, got hit by a car in Louisiana.
Oh, no.
And she was disabled, and I guess she rolled over in the middle of the intersection and was in a coma for months. Well, she got moved to Dallas with her son, and I talked to her about it. The police never heard her side of the story. And I said, oh, absolutely. The police need to hear your side of the story. The guy who hit her got the police records, got witnesses and everything. I said, the police need to hear your side of the story. You need to check in with the lawyer, see what your options and rights are. She had given up. She virtually had given up. So I got on the phone, so I found her lawyer in Louisiana who would work with her. The lawyer took on her case and got her a $60,000 settlement within 2 weeks of the statute of limitations.
Wow.
So it was so exciting, and she had given up. She virtually had given up. And afterwards, she sent me a thank you note and said, you know, I have faith again in life, and I have faith in the system again. So that's one of my favorite success stories, that one there.
Yeah, that's very good.
Yeah.
If you had a piece of advice to share with our listeners, I know that you have a personal story that, mm-hmm. that you shared with me last night while we were preparing you for this. So why don't you share that and then kind of segue that into your advice.
Sure. Well, close to my heart is really I advise adult children and seniors to be cognizant of how you feel emotionally. Mental illness is very common with seniors. There's a lot to deal with. There's stress. There's a plethora. There's many medicines that you can get symptoms from. You have to deal with issues of loss, anxiety. For the adult children, be proactive in monitoring your parents' emotional state. Watch for depression, anxiety, personality disorder. My father was on medicine. He was on cortisone for multiple myeloma, blood cancer, and he had a total personality change. He became very irritable, very mean, difficult to live with. It was horrible for my mother. It was extreme personality change. And they were in Tucson, and me being in Dallas, it was very difficult for me to deal with it. Their particular doctor was from a different culture, would not recognize the mental illness, would not treat or diagnose it, and it destroyed my father, and it destroyed the family. So please, please encourage people to be proactive in working with your doctor to deal with any mental illness that arises, because it is very common. It really is more than you would think. Have your doctor set an appointment with the doctor and sit down and say, you know, look, my dad or my mother is very, very irritable. What can we do to either have her see a psychiatrist, a psychologist, or get her on some psychotropic medicine like antidepressant, antioxidant, anti-anxiety?
Okay.
So be proactive in treating and dealing with it. And if the doctor's not comfortable with it, you know, get a referral for another doctor. You know, it is very common. And it's about quality of life. It's not just doctors often take great pride in prolonging life with all these new medicines and treatments, but they need to take a look at the quality of life, too, because that's so important
right.
at the end of life. So really encourage them to be aware of it, be cognizant of it, and deal with it.
Yeah.
And work in a positive way with your doctor to be willing to treat it.
That's some great advice. And if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Yes, my website is Organize and Rejuvenate, and that's REJUVENATE. A lot of people stumble over the spelling of it, or you can look at DallasProfessionalOrganizer.com. But my phone number is 972-816-8004, so 972-816-8004. You're welcome to contact me with any questions or if I can help you with any organizing in the home or any tips. to feel free to contact me. I also have all these senior resources, since I specialize in working with seniors. I have these senior resources on my website as well, so you can look those up also.
All right.
And, of course, Griswold is also on my website.
Yeah,
Imagine that.
We definitely appreciate that.
Sure.
All right, Linda, I appreciate you taking the time to join us this morning.
Well, thank you for having me.
Wealth of information, and I enjoyed speaking with you. And we'll send it back over to Brad and Sam in Atlanta.
Thank you, Kevin, and thank you, Linda, for being on the show. We always appreciate hearing from you. So in Atlanta this morning, we have two guests. We have a return guest, Alton Reynolds, and Barry Wolf, his associate. Barry is the president of Wolfstone Realty Advisors International and a founding principal, along with Alton, of Healthcare Affiliates International. And good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here.
Well, it's our pleasure.
You guys can speak at the same time, the double mint twins here?
As long as they do it in harmony, we're okay.
That's right. Well, Elton. Okay, now that's
boy,
over
someone's
with.
Got my disease. I love it. This is a glorious day.
Yeah, I'm sure I'm not going to hear the end of that for a while.
I told you, Barry, you'd come back to him. I told you.
Alton, thanks for being here again. Welcome back.
It's a pleasure.
Why don't we start with you, if you could just remind our listeners, or for those that may not have heard the first time, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, where you went to school, how you got to be where you are. And then when you're done with that, we'll flip over and let you do the same, Barry.
Okay. To start, I first was involved in healthcare in the United States Navy back in 1968, doing psychiatric evaluations of Navy and Marine personnel coming back from Vietnam. And then after I completed my service, I went back to school, finished up my undergraduate degree in abnormal psychology, and then did my master's work in the psychology of learning and counseling psychology, and have spent 40 years in various different areas of healthcare, both on the clinical and on the business side. Grew up primarily in Western New York State and Fort Lauderdale, Florida. So I got to experience some different types of weather, for sure.
And culture.
Yeah. Of course, in Fort Lauderdale.
The snowbirds.
Yeah. Right. Of course, a lot of the people in Fort Lauderdale were transplants from the Northeast, so it wasn't the same as when I first moved to Georgia 30 years ago. And go out into some of the I did a lot of work at rural hospitals in the Southeast, and of course one of the first things they'd ask me was, now who was your daddy's daddy? And I knew that I was in the country then. And I better have the right answer, you know.
Yeah. So that was a real cultural shift then.
Yeah, absolutely. And they would ask me, well, you know, someone from New York, how are you going to know anything about what our challenges are? And I would explain to them that I was not from Manhattan. I'd never lived or worked in a skyscraper, that I'd grown up in rural New York State, and that people in rural areas, all parts of the country, are quite similar. I said, if it had been sort of a shift from urban to rural, that would have been a bigger challenge to understand what they were trying to do in their hospitals and what they were, both clinically and as far as building new facilities and things of that sort. And usually I convinced them that I was an okay guy. So, just to kind of jump way forward, Barry and I met each other through a mutual friend about 3 years ago, and Barry, of course, will tell you about his real estate background, and we took my 40 years in healthcare. We merged the two together and have had quite a bit of success.
Excellent. Barry, why don't you kind of answer the same question?
Sure. pardon me. I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and went to the University of Pittsburgh, where I received my B.A., an MA in Urban Regional Planning and Urban Economics. And by the way, we absolutely love the rivalry between Pitt and WVU.
I want our listeners to know that I quietly sat here and behaved myself, okay?
We were friendly competitors. Sam. Nothing else. But I have 35 years experience in commercial real estate and in asset management, property management, real estate brokerage, business brokerage, funding and finance, financial analysis. Alton and I started our business about 3 years ago. I saw an opportunity to focus my real estate business in the healthcare arena because of the need. And I'd like to share with you one thing that a couple statistics, which basically were the basis for my making the decision to build a healthcare company with Alton. The elderly population, 65 and over, has grown from, in the year 2000, 35 million to 40.4 million in 2010, with projections in 2020 at 54.8 million and in 2030 at 72 million. And this is data provided by the Agency on Aging, the Department of Health and Human Services. Another statistic which I thought was interesting is persons reaching the age of 65 have an average life expectancy as follows. For women, it's 18.8 years beyond 65. For men, it's 17.3 years beyond 65. The third statistic, which I thought was equally interesting, the percentage of Americans age 65 expected to survive to age 90. In 1940, that was 7%. 1980 was 25%. In 2000, it was 28%, and projected 2050 of 42%. And that was statistics prepared by the National Center for Health Statistics Bureau. So very interesting statistics in terms of our demographics, and the population that we have in this country is aging, and which is the reason why Alton and I are so focused on senior housing, specifically assisted living, nursing homes, as well as memory care facilities, rehab hospitals, long-term acute care facilities. We are another interesting statistic. Assisted living facilities in 2007 represented 975,000 residents. In other words, there were 38,000 facilities which provided services for 975,000 residents. By 2030, that number is expected to increase to 2.2 million residents. So the growth is substantial, it's continuous, and the demand is going to be there.
You know, as you speak, and obviously being associated in healthcare as well as senior, the senior care arena for a number of years, just a number of questions come to mind. I guess the first one that either one of you, medical industry arena, as well as the senior care arena or senior population, is dramatically changing. For good or for bad, I'm not here to discuss that. What do you see the influence of that, the way our medicine is going to be practiced and the way we're going to age over the next 20, 25 years? How is that going to influence exactly what you're attempting to do, develop these multi-use facilities?
I'll make a couple of comments on that and then see what Barry would like to add. I think one of the biggest challenges is the merging of healthcare treatment or services to the aged, because in the past there was more of a focus, in my opinion, on adults, middle age, young adults, teenagers, children. There hadn't been as much in like geriatrics. And it was actually an area that was avoided by a lot of physicians just because there was some challenges there that didn't exist in taking care of younger people.
It wasn't exciting.
No.
And there probably was no money at some point.
Right. Yeah. It was not very sexy. No. Yeah. No, not at all. And matter of fact, you found an awful lot of the foreign physicians going into those areas because there was less competition. And over time, like one of the things I do is I help put organizations together as far as putting team members in place and finding psychiatrists in particular who understand geriatrics and also psychiatry and treating that that age group and that subgroup is a big challenge because the demand is way beyond the supply as far as both knowledgeable professionals and settings for those people to be treated in. And one of our biggest challenges is to develop a variety of different types of settings for those seniors to live and to flourish as much as possible as they age. And that's why both Barry and I have had this interest in the different types of settings, the ones he mentioned, like the nursing homes, the assisted living, you know, trying to match up the right type of setting for each individual and one that's appropriate for the individual and that the family has confidence in.
Let me. Brad knows me. I'm all about this. I'm intrigued by where we're moving. From a business standpoint, you're businessmen. My philosophy is that the quality of medicine will move where it is economically rewarding to do so. I think it's simple economics. So with that being the case, and we know that the reimbursement levels are being squeezed constantly. In other words, it's hard for practicing healthcare professionals to make money as they did before. How's that going to play into this? And I mean, it's not what you do. I know that, but it's got to be a part of your equation.
I have one quick comment, and then I'm going to hand it to Barry to see what he would like to add. Something that makes me very sad is that there's a huge need in the state of Georgia, and I'm sure nationally, for inpatient units that specialize in med psych. In other words, people who have significant medical problems and psychiatric problems. And about the only program that is available here in Georgia is at the Emory University. All the rest of them have closed. The reason being is that the insurance companies have said, we will reimburse you for the psychiatric services or we'll reimburse you for the medical services, but we're not going to, you know, reimburse you for both, even if you're treating both.
All right. Now, and again, I'm not taking sides here, but what is the federal programs, i.e. Medicare right now? Are they on the same bandwagon, so to speak, or are they different?
It's still a huge challenge to get reimbursed anywhere near the cost of treatment for these people. So you have to be a saint or a fool to treat a lot of these people that have the med psych problems and the geriatric psychiatric problems and the mixture of med psych, geriatrics, and the whole thing. And then, of course, what happens as a result of that is often people who need to be in a med psych unit either end up on a medical floor and the nurses don't like it because they say, I didn't sign up to be a psychiatric nurse, or they end up in a psychiatric facility where the psychiatric nurses say, my expertise is not these medical issues, and they don't feel comfortable with it.
And I've kind of gotten a little bit off track, but I know that is a key, has to, in my mind, would have to be a key element into what you're attempting to do with these multi-use facilities. Barry, from the pure development real estate standpoint, can something you can add to that? I mean, how are you going in when you are starting to develop a project? How are you looking at this issue?
One of the things that we're doing, the design of these facilities is changing. Much more efficient designs, basically looking at cost-effective ways of providing the services, cutting utility costs, creating an efficient design floor plan that will facilitate ease of access, not only for the residents, but also for the employees. The whole focus is reduce expense in any way possible. And, you know, basically the green energy concept, you know, trying to use efficient energies is a key component. And there's a lot of discussion about that these days. But that's an issue. Efficiency of design is critical. And maximizing square footage is critical, more so now than ever before, because costs are so high that, you know, developers need to make sure that they are getting the biggest bang for their buck, so to speak.
What does that look like? And I mean, I understand the green energy bit, but maximizing square footage, what are you doing differently today than maybe we were doing 20 years ago?
Well, some of the things that I've seen are basically centralizing shower areas in nursing homes, okay? Instead of having a shower in each room, you have bulk centralized shower areas.
Is that marketable? I mean, is really? I mean, there are people who will say, okay, I can,
yes,
for a cost effectiveness, I'm willing, really?
As an example.
I mean, I imagine that most people that are residents in a skilled nursing facility probably aren't independent in their bathing.
Well, that's true.
That's true.
Right.
So, you know, for somebody to come and pick them up and take them to a centrally located area, that doesn't mean there's no privacy. That doesn't mean, you know, you're wheeling him into a gym locker shower, but
yeah.
Right,
it's, you're right.
But just something that's more efficient to process. Bottom line is, you know, if you can create a central shower facility that's got five or six stalls as opposed to putting shower in every single room.
That's right.
Of course, part of it depends on whether you're looking to provide this service to sort of high-end clientele or whether you're looking for something that's more in the middle. And, of course, the high-end clientele, they want more personal amenities. And
sure.
And as Barry was pointing out, there's an awful lot of people who are not extremely wealthy today.
It's demographics-driven, but the other thing that I think is of interest is none of us knows what's going to happen, okay, with the current medical healthcare plan. All we do know is that we're experiencing inflation and we're experiencing the cost of doing business is increasing. So, you know, to remain competitive and to provide facilities that are reasonable for middle-class people, whether it's a nursing home or assisted living facility or in-home care, it's got to be affordable to some degree. Which brings up the other issue, which we often talk about, which is long-term care, insurance. You know, and what role that's going to have down the road, and you know, that's a serious concern right now because a lot of insurance companies are actually getting out of that business because the business model is not working.
Yeah, and that's a whole different subject. And Alton and I've had this conversation. Basically, they can't underwrite it. They can't charge enough premium to pay for the expenses. People don't understand that.
Right.
But the cost today is so high. You just, if you charge the right amount of premium today for the risk that you're going to inherit tomorrow, it would be so expensive, everyone would go, forget that. There's no way I can do that.
I'll take my chances.
That's right.
Yeah. Something that I've found quite interesting and actually goes all the way back to like 25, 30 years ago when I first encountered it, and it was an extreme rarity at that time, was campuses where they're almost set up, sometimes it's vertical, sometimes it's horizontal, but where you'll have senior housing on the outer edges of the campus and then maybe assisted living in the next circle, and then you keep coming in to where you get to a hospice in the middle. And we're seeing more and more of that. And part of it is economic driven. Part of it is to minimize the transitions for the residents. In other words, you still have a lot of the same staff, a lot of the same environment, but you have more support, more structure as it's needed. And if you do have chronic illnesses, it becomes more acute. You've got people there to treat it and to help you with it and help you manage it.
Barry, and I think Alton just at a high level described these multi-use campuses mm-hmm. that you're speaking. But can you elaborate on that? Tell us exactly, if you can, what do these look like? How do they function?
Sure.
And how do you go about operating them?
Yes, there are several of these around the country, and there's actually one on the planning on the drawing board right now in Georgia, where it's looking at it from a concentric circle standpoint. The nucleus would be the highest care, highest intensity, which a hospital, hospice. Outside of that would be nursing home. Outside circle from there would be assisted living. Senior housing outside of that circle. Senior apartments. Single family and townhouse developments. And so it's basically as you go deeper in toward the nucleus, the intensity of care increases.
So we're not talking, if I just heard correctly, you're not talking about a master development plan that is specific for seniors. You're talking about a master development plan that starts when you're single, as a young individual moving inward as you age, I guess.
It's probably more designed for 55 and over.
Okay.
When you get to the point where you're, you know, you want independent living, but you want to be in an environment that has close proximity to the hospital. You can be part of this community, and as your needs increase, you continue to move further into the nucleus, and it's a very effective process.
What do you do first? What do you build first? Do you build the central high-level care facility first? Or do you build the outlying areas first?
I think from a development standpoint, you have to make sure there's a market need for that hospital to begin with. Once you're able to substantiate that, and you can start it off as a smaller hospital, phase one, and as long as it's serving that a region, then you can start building your tertiary developments.
Yeah, you can,
but I think having the need initially is important. Conversely, you can go the other route, and I've seen that happen as well, where people build single family and multifamily projects with the intent of building, capturing a market. But I think the best approach is to actually start with a small hospital that provides an immediate service for the community, and then build out from there.
As Barry's saying, you do it most often in incremental stages, and you have a master plan. You know what you're intending to do long term, and then you start wherever it makes most sense economically.
Okay. There are obviously the senior community is swelling, and the needs are not obscure. Everybody knows this, and consequently, I'm sure it's got the attention of a number of large companies that are looking to do exactly the same thing that y'all are doing or close to the same thing. So what is it that the Barry Alton team brings to the table? What's unique about what you're doing versus what some of these larger companies might be doing?
I think the thing that Alton and I bring to the table is we are a small firm, but we're very, very flexible, and we can move very quickly. We respond quickly to our clients' needs and have the ability to reach out to a number of different groups in the event that we need architectural assistance, funding assistance. If it's going to involve a merger or acquisition, we are aligned with a larger organization that does publicly traded companies. We don't do that, but we are aligned with a broker dealer that can do that. So we have great relationships with quality organizations, not only in Atlanta, but actually throughout the Southeast, and also some national relationships. The biggest thing we do is we provide good customer service. We're really focused on responding to our clients' needs and identifying opportunities for our clients that they may not be aware of.
There's a great blend, and I know this from being, again, associated with the profession, great blend from the clinical side with Alton and the real estate development side with you, Barry. And I think you have to take both of those in consideration as you start this master planning. I think it's a great blend.
Anyone that doesn't agree with you has got a lot to learn.
Well, there's a lot. You know, there'll be a lot of developers out there to say, we're talking about building housing, and they're going and doing that. And that's not what you're talking about. Mm-mm. You know, that's just one very small component of where it is.
It's something that Barry kind of touched upon also is that we have kind of a consortium or a network of about 50 different professionals who have years and years and years of experience in different facets of what we're doing. So within a phone call or two, we've got the appropriate additional team member to bring in so that we can move any project forward expeditiously.
Real quick, Alton, from the clinical standpoint, as you're looking at this master plan, are you targeting specific clinical disciplines, i.e., do you develop a campus for mental disorders? Do you develop a campus for pure acute medical situations or for long-term? Or do you bring a blended number of different disciplines in?
I think the best way to respond to that is that we've been involved in some situations where there was assisted living and then attached to it was maybe a nursing home, some memory care, where there was definitely a focus on psychiatry, mental health, and neurology. Mm-hmm. But now as far as intentionally blending everything, No, I can't say that we've done that. Now, whether that'll happen in the future or not, I don't know.
Well, I think ideally it is the ideal environment. The question always remains, does it economically make sense and is it feasible? Yeah. And who knows the answer? Yeah.
I've seen some couples where most often the wife is in the nursing home and the husband is in the memory care area just due to organic brain damage and dementia and what have you. Yeah. So they can still be near each other, have contact, but yet receive the kind of services they're most in need of.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to move on. Is there something, a special project or upcoming project, or can you even discuss of any of the project that you might be working on currently?
Give that to you.
Well, we're actually working on, I think we alluded to it earlier, we've got a specialty hospital we're working with a developer on and in the process of putting together an equity capital infusion, which would be a very exciting project. We're working with several assisted living groups, one for development, the other acquisitions of existing properties. We're getting more and more involved in the senior housing environment because of the need. Was just approached the other day by a gentleman who is looking to buy assisted living and specialty hospitals, and he is based in Texas and has a major company that employs 1,400 people And last year, their gross revenue was about $850 million. So they're a substantial group, and they're a consortium of sorts in that they own a lot of different types of businesses, from fast food restaurants to specialty hospitals, hotels, motels, you know, resort developments, a lot of apartment properties. And they're just very viable people. So we're working with a lot of different groups who are looking to buy or invest or sell healthcare-related businesses or real estate.
I'm going to ask another what-if question. I don't know if you can answer it. Am I totally off base in saying that future community development is going to be driven towards an elderly market versus a newlywed market? Or is it going to be a blend of both? I mean, I know you don't know. I'm just asking your opinion.
I think it's going to be a combination of both. You know, based on what we've been seeing, the majority of certainly the majority of senior housing has been assisted living facility housing. Senior meaning 55 and over housing, conventional apartments as well as assisted living and mixed-use developments. So the majority of the total, most of them are assisted living facilities. I think that the demographic changing as it is, we're seeing a higher incidence of development in the senior housing realm. I think the other thing that's very interesting about this whole process is housing in and of itself is going to shrink in size. And that's consistent with the type of senior developments that are taking place throughout the country, smaller developments, smaller projects. You know, the other issue is hotel conversions. Hotels are being converted into assisted living facilities and senior housing facilities.
Is that easily done?
It can be. It depends on the floor plan, but it is a very viable renovation approach.
I suppose it depends where it is. You know, if it's in New York City, there's no way you're getting a wheelchair into that bathroom.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you do have, you know, handicap accessible issues, and there are modifications that must be made to comply with local ordinances. But, it is a major focus. In terms of getting back to your question, the percentage of construction, new developments for young, middle age, and senior, I don't really have that answer,
but it's
growing. Yeah. But it's the senior element is no doubt a major focus.
You know, I can just picture where they'd have a community, and with all these seniors living so much longer, you might have the children and the grandchildren living in one end of the community, and these folks that are from 70 up to 92 living in the other, where they're not in each other's laps, but yet they have easy access to one another.
And if you could get that done, then I'm going to say that is somewhat the ideal situation, if you can get that done.
Well, and the interesting part about that is, you know, if you think of our oldest client when she died was 112 years old. So that means her daughter was about 90. And the granddaughter was perhaps in her late 60s, and the great-granddaughter may have been in her 40s. So, you know, with people living longer, you could have literally three generations living in one over 55 community.
Sure. Yeah.
Down in Florida, near Sarasota, my daughter lives there, and her mother lives there, and her grandmother lives there. So her grandmother's 83, her mother's in her 60s, and she's in her 30s, and then she's got children there.
Four generations.
Yeah, and they're all within a few miles of one another.
Yeah, I can see where that is, down the road, that would be the ideal situation. We have, as you can tell, and Brad knows, because he's given me most of the mic time today, I'm fascinated by this idea, this topic. Before we kind of wrap it up, is there anything else that you'd like to speak of concerning you and your organization before we do so?
I would just like to make a personal comment. In the last 3 years, my wife and I have been caregivers for my mother-in-law, and who had a myriad of health issues. In looking back at the situation, we realized that my mother-in-law didn't want to have anybody in the home, and so the burden really was on us to take care of her. And while we don't regret having done it, we do feel that a better approach would have been to have support and care and to be more of an advisor, looking over the quality of care that she's receiving than being in the tranches. Mm-hmm. That is probably the one piece of advice that I would have for our listeners. If you have elderly parents, sit down and develop a plan and see how you can get this completed. To put it all, the burden 100% on your own shoulders is a very difficult task. And while we're happy to have done that, you know, we had to fulfill the need and fill the void, but there are other ways of doing it. And
let's just hope that you and I remember those words when we're 80 yeah. and 90.
Yes, yes.
Because it's what you're saying is absolutely right. And, you know, people in our parents' generation probably never considered the idea of home care. But, you know, those of us in our 50s and 60s today, you know, we're familiar with it. And I hope for the sake of my children that I remember that 20 years from now when I'm the one looking for care.
The human nature is, I believe, not to totally embrace the idea that we are only here for a finite period of time, and we don't want to admit that we're going to grow old, and I don't, and I think everyone here around this table is in the beginning stages of where we should start thinking in those terms. I'm not 20 years old anymore, and I'm not the young Marine out there being invincible. So that was a great piece of advice, Barry. We certainly appreciate it. Alton, thank you for being our guest. We enjoyed again. Having you. We'd love to do it again and invite both of you back at some future date.
Thank you.
Before we go, real quickly, tell us how individuals can get a hold of either you individually or as a group.
Yeah. This is Alton, and I'll give you the contact information from me and then give Barry an opportunity to do the same. We spend a lot of time together, and we spend a lot of time apart. So
it's a good marriage.
I understand that. Can you tell between Brad and I?
Again, the company is Healthcare Affiliates International, and we do have some international projects, which we didn't touch on today. But if you're interested, we'll be glad to tell you about them. Best phone number for me is 404-932-2755. And we have offices here in Dunwoody, Georgia. And that's 4780 Ashford Dunwoody Road. Our website is www.globalhealthcareai.com. But actually, I like to think that Barry and myself are more interesting than the website. So okay. We'd rather you talk to us. But Barry, what would you like to tell the folks?
Just the best way to reach me is on my cell phone, which is 678-200-7759. And would love to hear from you.
We once again thank you, and I commend you, Barry, for being brave, giving out your cell phone number. We enjoyed having you. Great information. Love to continue this discussion, and hopefully we can do so in the future. We want to thank Linda and Kevin in Dallas for being with us today, and we want to remind our listeners that they can, if they wish to do so, they can listen to a rebroadcast of today's show at eugeriaradio.com. And as we always close, we want to remind everyone that the youth of this nation is its greatest national resource. It goes without saying that the seniors are the greatest national treasure. Thank you, and God bless.
Eugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.